Welcome back to Rockstock Channel. It is Wednesday, April 3rd, 6 a.m. here in New York. I've got my Canada Rocks hat on today, not the Rockstock Channel hat, because we have Chris Evans, the CEO of Winsome Resources, who I think on for maybe the third or fourth time, but with major news just on the tape overnight, which we're going to talk significantly about, of what was the Stornoway Diamonds mine, or an option to evaluate and prospectively buy, and very interesting transaction. Just want to remind everybody, we're advisors to investors in Winsome. Nothing you're going to hear today is investment advice, but also want to just flag for you, if you like this video, please like and subscribe and make a comment. What do you think about, Chris? So what other topics or guests you might like Rodney and me to cover on Rockstock Channel in coming months? Also, we just published our RK Equity Scoreboard for Q1, which will be contained within our Lithium Ion Bull, which is emailed monthly. If you're not already getting this directly to your email box, register your email at rkequity.com. And please follow Rodney and me on X. My handle is at Lithium Ion Bull. Rodney's at Rodney Hooper 13. And Winsome Resources has a quite active X and LinkedIn profile. So please check out at Winsome RES. And Chris Evans is at Chris E in Perth as his handle. We have been advisors and have helped raise, you know, some capital for Chris and Winsome since its IPO, since before its IPO in November of 2021, when it was spun out of Metals Tech, and RK Equity sponsor, or Rockstock Channel sponsor, Lithium Royalty Corp, is invested in and has a royalty, you know, on, and was a significant backer of the company into that IPO, and subsequently, after raising $18 million in the IPO at 20 cents, it was as high as 240. So it was an 11 bagger for anyone who got in early. But you've done three subsequent raises, in total about 90 million Aussie. The last one was a $34 million raise at about $2, you know, through flow through financing, which was done in September of last year. Number of investors were wondering why you dilute at that time. And I think everybody is now saying you're a genius for having done so. And it was not super dilutive, again, given the great flow through financing. You have research coverage from Canaccord, Red Spencer, who we just had on the program, and also Euros Hartleys, Trent Barnett, you know, who we had earlier this year, as well as Foster's, who was an early backer of Kidman and Pilbara, and I think Piedmont Lithium back in the day. So more of a niche broker, but with a good track record in lithium. Their target prices are somewhere between $1.40 and $1.50, having recently taken those down as they reduced their lithium price forecast. But nevertheless, that's a significant uplift from your current 88 cent stock price. Chris, we have observed you. I knew you at Altura. It's funny enough. I was writing my notes, you know, and it's on this pad from an Altura handout at a Fast Markets conference. But when Canada kicked out China from a couple of, you know, development stories, you entrepreneurially or aggressively, you know, consolidated or took advantage of and took a stake in Power Metals. We'll talk about that secondarily, but we've talked about James Bay and lithium generally, that there's going to be consolidation, you know, in the sector. You've just been a leader in not only making a huge discovery at Adina, which we want to talk about, there's still highly prospectivity, you know, at Canset, which was really the project that you IPO'd on. And there's a lot of hidden value there. Yeah. So with this acquisition, or this potential acquisition and the option, you're really demonstrating, I think, a path, you know, into production outside of the North American lithium mine, you know, and then there's Nemaska. We interviewed Arcadium's, you know, Paul Graves, who talked about Nemaska. This really, I think, potentially fast tracks you and Adina as a, I don't know, near term, definitely among the parties who can get into production relatively quickly. There is a valuation disconnect we've talked about, and the market recognizes between your resource and, you know, we love Patriot and Ken Rinsden, and it's a great story, Corvette, but just on a pure EV to resource ton, there's a huge disconnect. It's been all over Twitter as well. Some people made some analysis. I forget the recent article I read and tweeted about, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So just with that lead in, welcome back, Chris. Again, what's prompting this interview is this major press release and news of the former Stornoway diamond mine. So go ahead and let's start with that, and then Rodney will ask a bunch of other questions.
Well, thanks very much, Howard and Rodney, for having me on again. It's, as always, it's a pleasure. And as always, you do a wonderful introduction. You gave much of our history. It's a great process then. But that leads me, as you say, into the transaction that we just announced today, which was an option, an exclusive call option agreement to purchase the Renard Diamond Mine. Now, as a brief history for those who don't know the mine, it sits 60 kilometers to the south of our Adena project in a straight line. And we've mapped out the road that needs to be built in any case, whether we acquire this asset or not, because it's the shortest route to market. So the road's about 80 kilometres, but when it's going to be built. The Renard mine opened in 2016, and it was a bit of a darling of the Quebec mining world. Number one, because it involved the construction of the 167 highway, which extended basically from the Mistissini community, Cree community, all the way north to the Renard mine, which is a couple of hundred kilometres. And that was part of the Plan du Nord, which is a government initiative to bring infrastructure into northern Quebec. So the Renard mine was a catalyst for that road to be built. And it's the terminus of that road as we currently speak. But the mine opened in 2016. It operated until 2019 and then ran into a few financial problems because of the price of diamonds. And it went into administration, was bailed out by a consortium of companies, two of whom were Investissement Québec and CDPQ, the largest pension fund in Quebec. Both of those are sort of government-related entities. They bailed the, amongst the Cisco and another company called Triple Flag, they bailed the mine out, took it private, it became Stornoway, and it then operated from 2020 until 2023, late last year, when again the diamond price dropped. They were down at about 800 metres in the underground component of the mine, and there was quite an expense to access further reserves. So they went into administration again and began a sale process. Now, because the diamond reserves are rather marginal and the price of the forecast for diamonds is not great, there weren't too many diamond buyers around. But at that time, we had a look at it because, and this was late last year, we realized it was a 2 million ton per annum or 2.2 million ton per annum DMS operation that contained many of the similar processing steps that we intended on using or probably intend on using to concentrate our lithium based on the test work we've done so far. And that is, there's a jaw crusher, there's a cone crusher, there's a high pressure grinding rolls, there's an optical sorter, and then a two-stage DMS at the end. So it looks almost exactly like a typical flow sheet for a lithium processing, coarse grain lithium processing plant, if you pick one off the shelf. We started investigating further, realized the infrastructure there is first class. As I said, the road connects to Renard, and that then continues onto the highway network in Quebec and down to the railhead at Chibougamau, about 400 kilometers to the south. There is a LNG gas power plant there, a 16 megawatt gas plant. There's 500 room accommodation block that'll probably be reduced to about 350 if we choose to take it over. There's a huge administration area. There are recreational facilities. There's a tailing storage facility. There's two open pits which could potentially be used for tailing storage if we were to repurpose the mine for lithium concentration. And there's the underground workings, which could also potentially be used for tailing storage. So we thought this is a great opportunity. And it's almost like a once-in-a-lifetime fluke. We're 60 kilometers away from what's now the fifth largest hard rock lithium resource in North America. We find a ready-made mine with A1 infrastructure and almost the same flow sheet as we would be designing anyway. So we, during our due diligence phase, we had to think about how we would want to structure this deal. And given that our share price has suffered, like everyone else's has over the last 12 months or so, and we've still got a bit of work to do on due diligence to make sure we understand what the full cost of repurposing this mine would be, the full cost of building the road, which, as I said, has to be done anyway, and any other potential liabilities, although we have done 3 months of due diligence thus far, we thought we would like an option to buy this, to buy ourselves another 6 months minimum up to a year to make the final decision. And in that time, ideally, our share price will improve as well. So over the last few months, we've negotiated that deal with Stornoway, and we think the deal we presented today offers a fantastic opportunity for Winsum shareholders. We have paid $4 million up front for the 6 month option. During that time, we'll essentially do two studies, one on a greenfield Adena development without the Stornoway or the Renard Diamond Mine, and one a brownfield study, assuming we truck ore from Adena down to the Renard Mine, a repurposed mine, and then we concentrate it there and then drive and rail it to market. So we'll do those two studies in the next 6 months. We'll compare the two and we'll use those as the basis to make a decision upon whether we exercise the option to buy the mine. And if we do exercise that option, we make a $15 million payment upon exercise, and that's in cash or shares at our election. And then 12 months after that, we make a $22 million payment, again, cash or shares, our election. And then after 2 years, we make a final $15 million payment. So there's a total of $52 million paid, either in cash or shares, entirely up to us, if we decide to exercise this option. So we think it gives maximum optionality for our shareholders, gives us time to fully assess this opportunity, all the opportunities, and that's capital, cost-saving opportunities, environmental opportunities, and social opportunities as well, because there were 400 and something 50 people employed at the Stornoway mine. And so it was a big employment opportunity for local communities, and we'd like to continue that. The environmental savings that we would make appear to be huge by not having to build all that infrastructure again. And given that over $900 million Canadian has been spent on this, the repurposing would be a fraction of that. And so the capital cost savings could be in excess of $500 million. So on the face of it, it looks a no-brainer. It looks incredible. But as I said, we've got studies to do over the next 6 months before we make a final decision.
And Chris, who will help you with those studies?
We've already been using a number of consultants, primarily a company called Synectic, who worked have already worked on a couple of projects, lithium projects in Quebec, including the Moblan project. And so they're acting as our project managers and bringing the studies together. And that the greenfield study was already underway. And in fact, our pre-feasibility metallurgical test work is already underway as well. So that's going to help us significantly determine the process flow sheet we need and thus help us decide whether we take up this option or rather, well, if we do take it up, what modifications we need to the processing plant. So Synectic are a boutique organization that employ 50 or 60 people. They're providing the arms and legs, and then we're using a number of specialist consultants. As we advance beyond these initial studies, and when we decide we need a pre-feasibility study, say towards the end of the year, early next year, then we may wrap a bigger name around that, but we're not sure yet.
And then I guess the thing that's going to be key in investors' minds, Chris, is it's a great opportunity, but it's contingent on a road being built between Adena and Renard. So just fill us in on how that looks, who could do it, timeline, that kind of thing.
It is contingent on the road being built, but really the greenfield opportunity, even if we don't acquire this asset, this, I think the ultimate success is contingent on that road being built anyway, because it knocks about 400 kilometers off the trip down to the nearest railhead. So we've already made moves. We've already investigated that road. We already have a broad design. And we have already been working with a 100% Cree-owned company called Eskam Company, who have applied for critical minerals infrastructure funding, which is a federal funding initiative to build infrastructure in remoter areas of Canada. Eskam Company have applied for the first stage of funding for that road, which aims to get it shovel ready. And if it becomes shovel ready, then you can apply for the second stage, which covers some of the construction cost. Now, in both cases, for stage one and two, if it's First Nations led, then up to 75% of the cost can be covered by the Critical Minerals Infrastructure Fund. And as I said, Eskam Company, which is 100% Cree owned, have submitted the application, and we are named as their industry partners to support them in the application and then the design approval and ultimately the construction process of that road. And there are other funding initiatives available, many of which can be double dipped in a sense, both at a provincial and a federal level for that road. So we've been working on that for about 6 months now to try and determine where the funding is going to come from and how best the approval process should progress for that road. The length of time to get approvals and construct that road is probably in line with the rest of the approvals for the mine at Adina.
Chris, on this, considering when Stornoway was built, the government put in a major road already, you said, and they've lost all those jobs. So we've done some work with Frontier Lithium, and, you know, it's a completely different area and it's a completely different province, you know, and they have, you know, a road, but like, it's the same case for lots of projects. I don't know if does Patriot need a road? Do other people need a road? I'm just, what I'm thinking about, like, infrastructure like this is necessary in remote areas, and Quebec as a province have IQ. They've supported Nemaska. They've supported all sorts of things. It seems highly probable that the funds that you're talking about, you know, and the timelines, you know, are pretty good to tap into.
I think so. There's definitely government funding available, and there's a government, judging on history, with this project, there's a government impetus to make it successful. So we'd like to think, and in addition, if we take up this call option agreement and if we pay in shares, then Investment Quebec will be a shareholder of ours. And I think that's a good thing in when you're building a project in Quebec. So we would certainly be talking to the likes of Investment Quebec and other government agencies about the sort of support we can get offered to make sure our approvals in general and the road as well can advance as quickly as possible. But there's a process to go through. And we've seen from the recent news that's all around in Quebec, if you spend any time there, you can't help but hear about Northvolt. There's a bit of an outcry about the perceived shortcutting in environmental approvals that's been granted to them by the Quebec government. And the people in Quebec don't seem to like that. So there's an environmental approval process that's got to be followed, both for the road and for the mine and for the repurposing of the Renard mine, which we fully expect to go through over coming years. But what I think the potential acquisition of this mine does is that it reduces the risk of our permitting. It reduces the number of permits. For example, we don't need to permit an airport. We don't need to permit the road to the south, part of the road that I just described, but not the road that's already there. It reduces the overall risk, and I think this makes us more appealing to investors.
Jumping in here from the editing room to tell you about Lithium Royalty Corp. Lithium Royalty Corp is at the center of a global energy transition and manages a globally diversified portfolio of lithium-focused royalties in electrification and decarbonization. With 32 royalties on 29 higher-grade, lower-cost projects from exploration to production, LARC covers all the bases with well-managed risk, ESG considerations, and a scalable royalty structure. Lithium Royalty Corp is traded on the Toronto Stock Exchange, ticker symbol LIRC. To find out more, visit lithiumroyaltycorp.com. Thank you for that. You mentioned in the press release about possibly being a hub for other projects. And also, we're going to put up a map here, which kind of just shows the path from you know, down to Bécancour, where Arcadium is going to be building hydroxide facilities. So when you talk about, you know, those are two components there, you know, processing and then converting to chemicals, all within the province potentially.
That's right. We've been saying, well, first of all, as a lot of people have been talking about potential consolidation in the region, I think as you pointed out, we broader than the region, we like Power Metals a year and a half ago, and that's why we did some partial consolidation there and invested a couple of times to take us up to just below 20% in the company. And also we have all the offtake, which we quite like in another province. But I think us having these ready-made facilities potentially offers the opportunity for some consolidation in the region. It might offer a more credible pathway to production and a less risky pathway to production to some smaller lithium players in the area. So I think a lot of that stuff will come out of the woodwork over the coming 6 months as we do our studies. But as far as Bécancour goes, we've been saying for over a year now that our biggest strategic aim is to make sure our product is converted in Quebec. And that makes complete sense from a purely financial point of view. So our supply chains are smaller, but also from a social license point of view to make sure the value is kept in Quebec from the lithium we dig out of the ground there. So it was really encouraging at the PDAC conference recently that although we had a booth, I spent very little time there because all the strategic meetings, there were many Korean and Japanese companies that wanted to speak to us. And many of those have battery interests already in Quebec and they're interested in doing conversion. And several of them already have conversion capabilities. So in fact, myself and Simon Icapetta are going to Japan and Korea in about 10 days to meet some of these people.
Power Metals, Chris, they've just released some numbers from the initial start of their drill program that looked very encouraging, and some decent coarse-grained spodumene in there as well. Really good. That could mean, easier processing. So again, another good thing for you. You've got nearly 20% in the offtake, and I see Hayden Dax is now CEO. Your thoughts on that initial drilling? It looks to be promising.
It looks spot on, and if anyone can make the most of that that deposit at Case Lake, I think it's Hayden. He's got about 5 years of experience in lithium and other base metal exploration around Ontario. He knows the ground really well. He's a really experienced geologist. I've known Hayden for a couple of years now, and I had something to do with him coming on board. I was certainly pushing for him to come on board and introduced him to Power Metals. He'll not only bring good outcomes in the drilling and the geological exploration work, but he'll also drive the good outcomes for the company. He knows exactly what needs to be done investor-wise. There's already been 13,000 meters of drilling prior to this drilling program at Case Lake. This couple of thousand meters will only add to that. And when you think with a good deposit, our 59 million tons came from 27,000 meters of drilling. They've done half of that already. There's a deposit there. It just remains to see how big, I think. But also the other exciting thing that we're getting a lot of inquiries about from Power Metals side is the polyusite, the cesium. That's in short supply in the world these days. And that's, of course, why Sinomine originally wanted it, and why they had the 5-ish% that we originally purchased off them and all the offtake rights.
Yes, I saw that. That's a great point, because I have been hearing about the shortage on cesium and where it's running out. So that's that could be a bit of a sleeper on that side.
The lithium's the bit of a sleeper at the moment, and the cesium's becoming hotter. We're getting a lot of inquiries about it.
And Chris, would that clearly be from Western?
Yeah, it's not China who's interested, put it that way.
And Chris, if we can move back to Adina, in your presentations, you've highlighted a mineral resource update in half one, which I presume then means sometime this quarter, then you're expecting to do an update, and if I could just get a sense of how much additional drilling meters are going to be included in the next update.
When we published the last one in December, it was 27,500 meters of drilling that contributed towards that, and we still had 20,000 meters sitting in the lab. So all of that is now out of the lab, and we've largely published that over about three ASX releases in the last couple of months. In addition, this year, we've done about 20,000 meters of drilling on top of that, and probably half of that will contribute towards the upgrade in the coming 1 to 2 months. So probably another 30,000 meters, which is going to support the studies that we're doing that I just described earlier in the latter half of this year. So that the main focus will be to drag a good percentage, i.e. above 50, into the indicated category. There'll be an increase in the size, of course. It won't be as massive as the jump straight to 60 million tonnes. But also, we're very keen to get that grade up to 1.2% or above. We were just a bit disappointed in the last one with the simplistic modelling we did.
Yes, although the one thing I did note when I went back and had a look is your cutoff grade for your original mineral resource was 0.6, which is pretty high relative to some of the other, you know, projects that I've seen out there. So that's pretty robust having that as a cutoff.
Exactly. We've got a few parameters to play with, as you always do, but we didn't want to leave ourselves too fine on that cutoff grade for the upgrade we knew was coming in a few months.
Yeah, 1.2 would be very solid. And then just it seems to be open all over. You know, the strike lengths could grow from 1.3 to over 3 kilometers in total. So I guess my question is, you have the flow through funding, which means that has to go into the ground. And you're growing the resource at Adena. I guess my question is there a number, say like 80 or 100 million, where you say, okay, that's substantial, and then, you know, pivot to continue to explore at Kansett or elsewhere in your portfolio? Or do you want to keep going with Adena and see how big it can get and stay focused on the one project?
We're only focused for the moment on Adena because of the winter, really. The summer exploration season is shortly starting, so we'll be moving back onto both Kansett and Tilly to start summer programs there. They're labor intensive, but they're not really cost intensive compared to the drilling we're doing. So we've got about 30 staff members at the moment with geologists and fieldies to be able to go and do those relatively cheaply. So we intend to do that during the summer. In terms of the number at Adena, I think it's somewhere between 80 and 100 million tonnes, which we'd hope to be at by, you know, around the end of this year, by the time we spend our flow through funds for the remainder of the year. 80 to 100 million with an appropriate amount in indicated to support a PFS early next year. And then if you assume 40 to 50 of that is dragged into reserves, then ultimately throughout drilling perhaps next year, then with 2.5 million tonne per annum, you've got a 25-year mine life or 20 to 25-year mine life. And I think that's a great base case for the PFS and then ultimately the FS. Although I'm sure when we do our further infill drilling next year to bring all of those into measured and then ultimately reserves, we'll expand the resource again. I've little doubt it'll be over 100 million tonnes by next year.
And that's interesting what you've said there, because the Stornoway, I think, is 2.2 is the capacity now. So that's very similar.
It is, yeah. That's right. There's a nice 20-year mine life falling out straight away in the next, quite easily at that capacity.
100 million tons is a bit of a magic number in, you know, from a resource size perspective in the market. I know when Patriot put out their resource, they were, you know, waiting to get, you know, to that number. Mm. There is that relative value argument we've talked about before. Do you have any comment on that? I know, look, Patriot's a great company, but like, why do you think after the stock rose so much, you know, I don't know, it was 220, 240, you know, at its peak last year, on a relative basis, you've fallen a lot more than Patriot. And, you know, so markets are fickle, shareholders are, you know, different, but Lithium Royalty Corp has been a, you know, substantial, you know, backer of yours. You have lots of good shareholders from the IPO. And why do you think there's this valuation disconnect?
I don't know, on a relative basis, if we have fallen a lot more. We've fallen sort of 2.5 times is our maximum, or 2 and a bit, maybe 2.3 times. I think Patriot's about the same, but regardless of that, we should be higher, but I agree with you there. I think, like a lot of this game, some of it's about luck in terms of timing in the market. When it became apparent around mid last year that we had at least 50 million tons based on the drilling we'd done, I think at that time the market was starting to get flooded by a lot of people telling a lot of Aussies in particular, telling a great story around Quebec with a piece of ground that contained some pegmatites, and investors and fund managers, from what we were told, were getting a bit tired of it and failed to distinguish ourselves from the crowd that was there. And so we failed to get the sort of purchase in the market that Patriot had got maybe 6 to 9 months before that, in the lead up when the market was really hot. And they could point to an up-drill results at the time to show they had 50, 100, 200, whatever it was going to be. And so I think they benefited from that. And then by the time we put out our resource, there's no such thing as a good news. So we dropped 20% the day we put out a 59 million ton resource. There's not. I don't think that was an error. I think that was just the market, and there's not too much we can do about that timing. But I think when we were high, we raised the money you talked about before. We've got $45-ish million in the bank at the moment. And while most of our peers are in cash preservation mode because they don't have any prospect of raising money at any decent value in the near future, we're still drilling away. We're still exploring. We're acquiring new assets so that as the market starts to improve, and perhaps it is now, we believe we'll be the first ones to benefit from that improvement, and we'll get those rises that we should have got last time, but we were a bit unlucky on the timing.
Chris, just in terms of your cash balance and now, you know, with the option spend and so on, what's the runway on that, you know, given your burn rate and the option premium? How long is that 45 good for?
I think that it takes us out a majority of this year, if not into next year, depending on exactly how much we spend and when we exercise the option, if and when we exercise the option for Stornoway, and if we pay in cash or if we elect to pay some in shares. There's a whole lot of variables there, but I think we're spending a couple of million a month on drilling and studies. That gives us this year comfortably. It pushes us into next year very easily if we wish. But in the first quarter of next year, no doubt we'll be getting low if we stretch it out that long. That's probably the best guidance we can give, given there's so much could happen.
And just on that, I thought looking at the announcement, it was very smart on your side to have the optionality between cash or shares to pay for Stornoway, you know, if you exercise it, because then you have the free optionality of if your share is running, you can use that or, you know, potentially a strategic partner with cash. So it gives you some flexibility.
I think so. That was very important to us. We really pushed for that point because we didn't want to appear come raise just because we were acquiring a fantastic asset. We can do that without necessarily having to raise money.
On the valuation question again, sorry, like, yes, you're consolidating, but there are fears that you could be, you know, taken over, you know, too soon. And you've seen a lot of aggressive M&A in WA last year while the price was falling. In Quebec, you didn't have these dynamic entrepreneurs as you have in WA, but you also weren't able to drill a lot, you know, late last year. So have you done anything to protect yourself in the case of, you know, hostile bid?
We've done the usual things that I think we can do, everything we can do, I hope. And that's, we've appointed appropriate advisors to keep an eye on the market for us and make sure we get all the intelligence we can if there's anything to be known. We keep an eye on our share register. The top 20 hasn't changed. It's changed by about 1% in the last 6 months. So we're fairly comfortable there. The other thing we're doing is racing towards putting out the studies that I referred to earlier, and they're reasonably well advanced. And we are, as I said, going to Korea and Japan to start off the discussions with strategic partners in about 10 days. Say start off. Take those discussions to the next stage because we've already met most of them at least once. The studies we've been doing since about October last year on the greenfield and now the due diligence that we've done for the last few months on the brownfield project, they form a significant amount of data and the basis of the studies, two studies I referred to. They're essentially sitting in a data room, and there are, of course, one of the ways is to protect yourself against an early buyout is to have a white knight prepared to come in if needed. So some of the strategic parties we're talking to now will slowly become familiar with our project over the coming months. And I think that then gives them the ability to assist in countering any aggressive moves. And of course, the other advantage of having a strategic assessing what's on the table from strategic partners is when we have to do our next raise, be that whenever the first quarter of next year, call it, then by then we want to know if there's an appropriate strategic partner to bring on board as part of that to help us achieve those strategic wants.
On that idea, we saw recently Mitsubishi came in at project level into Frontier. The Koreans generally, I know LG Chem, you know, invested at parent level at Piedmont, and they've done that, you know, in other companies. Between the Japanese and the Koreans, and just obviously you've had talks, you're going to advance those talks. Do you have any early indication of what you think is, you know, would be most value or creative or preference?
I think a number of them have conversion capabilities or the ability to put a conversion solution in place, which is the first thing we want. But ideally to have the complete supply chain tied up in Quebec would be ideal. And the government have indicated to us that that would be very preferential for them, particularly given how they've invested in a number of smaller companies, standalones like Nemaska in the past, Sayona more recently with Moblan, and now companies like that are subject to market forces and can the investment of the government can suffer as a result. So they would like to see someone like us tied up in a supply chain. So for example, there's us, there's a converter, and then there's an end user, call it an OEM. If we're mining in Quebec, we're having converted a Bécancour and we're sending it to an OEM who's got a facility in Quebec as well. And all of us are, there's pricing mechanisms in there so that we're not subject to these huge market swings, then that the Quebec government has told us that would be very encouraging for them. And that would perhaps encourage them to invest more in projects like ours.
It's interesting. Some commentary there. There's Echo Pro, which is in Bécancour. I think POSCO is interested. The Japanese and Koreans are interested. Everyone's a little bit very focused on, you know, the IRA in the US. But this whole, what you just said in terms of the pricing and the whims, you know, Paul Graves at Arcadium basically said, you know, he pays some attention to that, but not like the China spot price is not super relevant, like the conversations he has and his CapEx plans in Quebec are tied to, he has five, I think, significant OEM partners. And so it sounds like you're thinking along similar lines with those partners, you know, whether it be, they have Toyota Susho, they got BMW, they got Ford, but there's plenty of others. And he was articulating that they're getting a lot smarter and understanding, and you know that for you to invest there needs to be, you know, appropriate floor prices and could be ceilings, but if it's tied to, you know, linked to hydroxide and feeding cathode and feeding battery and feeding OEM all within the province or, you know, North America,
yeah,
it looks like those are the players that are likely to be strategic partners to you. you know,
so exactly.
watch who's in Quebec. And okay, that's great.
Yep.
I want to make one comment. I don't know if I mentioned it at the beginning, but you know, I Champion Iron Ore was a huge success after a big failure in iron ore. We often compare lithium to iron ore in WA in particular, but Champion is both listed in Canada and Australia. There are a lot of people who like and know that story, but that was bought for almost nothing, but had like over $1 billion spent on it. And then it was turned around into a significant success story. So I see in this Stornoway Renard, you know, facility that you're doing, some parallels to the turnaround there. You just cents on the dollar, you know, boom bust market, you know,
yeah.
Different shareholders may realize the value. Is that, what do you think of that analogy?
It would be an honor to be compared to Champion because they're such a success story, and hopefully we become that successful. But I think there's some pretty good comparisons there. Again, it goes a little bit back to the timing that I referred to before. Perhaps previous owners were subject to misfortunes in terms of timing when the market. Again, we're a different commodity, so we can jump in. It's just some of it's luck, just luck that it's right down the road from us. But ideally, yeah, there's a billion-dollar asset sitting there that we can, if we choose to elect to take up the option, we can get for a fraction of that price, and we can repurpose and make it into a successful operating mine again, and which will benefit not only us, but the community and the government and the province, as well as the country.
So, Chris, many companies, you know, offer limited insight into, you know, their ESG and engagement with local communities, but you guys seem to have made a substantial effort on this front. Can you just, you know, it is important in Canada. Can you just elaborate a bit more?
We've made it a real point right from the beginning, because that's the easiest point in a company's life cycle to start thinking about and implementing good practice ESG. And the first headline thing about Quebec, of course, is the hydropower that we potentially have available to us, which will make a low carbon lithium product. But secondly, like anywhere on the planet where you want to build a project, then the first engaging the local people, and particularly the First Nations, is extremely important. And the Cree people, and very different, as you would expect, to any other First Nation that I've worked with around the world, but the differences are really interesting, and they're encouraging, in that the Cree nation is very commercial, and they've been introduced to that over the last 40 to 50 years with Hydro-Quebec. So they often have their own contracting arms. There's of course, a mining culture in Quebec, which makes them used to dealing with companies like us. And at the James Bay Treaty, which was signed decades ago now, really opened up the Cree people to be able to deal with organizations like us with a degree of transparency, I think. And so we have made a special effort to engage with the Cree Nation in general, but the Cree Nation of Mistissini in particular, who are our First Nation owners. I appointed Dr. Genevieve Morinville, who's our VP Sustainability and Regulatory Affairs, very, what you might call very early, in May last year, which arguably, given we'd made a discovery, but we were a long way off having a resource, you could argue that's early, but that was key in getting a good, what we think is a good relationship with the Cree Nation and Mistissini. I've visited there 3 times myself. I was there a week and a half ago. Now, it just so happens that the Cree Nation of Mistissini are also the First Nation owners of the Renard Diamond Mine. Different trap lines, so different families, but the same Cree community. And a number of Cree people from that community were employed at Renard. So this all, we hope, helps build our relationship with the Cree Nation of Mistissini, but also it adds no end to our ESG credentials if we don't have to build all that infrastructure again. You look at the aerial photo of the Renard mine, if we have to build all that disturbance happens again, then we can avoid that, that's an amazing ESG tick in the box. We talk about it quite a bit. And at this point, it doesn't add a great deal to our share price because it's just something that happens in the background. And for an exploration company, ESG is not it's not mandated really in anyone's investment criteria. I don't think, but it's there in the background and discerning investors see it. And as we increase the quality of our register, it'll become more and more important. It'll become obvious that it's embedded in our practices and in our culture. And I think that'll mean a lot eventually and soon, I think, given the rapid pace at which we're developing.
Yeah, so that was something I was going to ask earlier. So if you do the Stornoway deal, it's a very different mining permit or application that you'll need at Adena if you're going to feed that plant. So in terms of what you need in permitting and disturbance at Adena, that's very different under a brownfields setup or under, you know, the trucking, you know, to Stornoway.
That's right. There'll be much less disturbance area at Adena, which is great environmentally. But there'll be repurposing required of the licenses to some extent at Stornoway as well.
But not, I mean, materially, I mean, in terms of what you're going to do, it's just it's shifting from diamonds to lithium and the adjustments that you'll need to make.
It's essentially depositing pegmatite instead of kimberlite and working out what, if any, environmental differences there are between the two. If we put pegmatite in a tailings facility rather than kimberlite.
And then the other one, Chris, you often, you know, Quebec is often painted with the same brush or one brush regarding infrastructure in the region, but you've actually got some quite unique characteristics of your own in terms of infrastructure available. So just, you know, reiterate those positives, please.
I think with or without the Renard option, for the best economic outcome, we need the road to the south that either goes through or around the Renard mine. That's an 80-kilometer road. That's nothing unusual by mining standards in anywhere in the world, and particularly Quebec. And those can be built, all-weather roads, and they're around $1 million a kilometer is a good figure to put on those for a haul road in that region. Once we build that portion of road, then it's about 400 kilometers with an all-weather road that's already constructed down to Chibougamau by rail. And from there, it's about 500 kilometers to Bécancour, for example, or the Port of Montreal, which is even less. So those transport infrastructure is actually quite good. If we acquire the Renard mine, there's already a 16-megawatt power plant there, although it'd be nice to think that we can get hydropower installed there in the future if this becomes a long-term solution to operate out of Renard. And there's the mining culture and almost infrastructure that's already set up there. There was a 450-person workforce at Renard until October last year. Some of those are going to be retained. There's still 40 or 50 still on site who are taking care of care and maintenance. If we take up the option, we'll keep some or all of those into the future to maintain the mine until we operate it again. And it's a known mine, so it'll be easy to attract the human element of infrastructure, I think, if we operate this mine.
All right. I think, Rodney, we don't have any more questions. Thank you very much, Chris, for this substantial update and the timing of it. And we'll speak to you soon, and you know, exciting times on the way for Winsome.